Thank you very much for joining us this hour on the Artists First Radio Network. Tony Kaye in the studio, and of course, this is Authors First. Thanks a lot for joining us this hour. If you have a question or comment, you can send them to dj@artistfirst.com, and I'd be happy to read them during the show. Otherwise, we invite you to visit the websites we mentioned during the broadcast. And of course, it is with great pleasure that we bring our guest this hour, Karen Vanderlaan, and her new novel, Show and Tell, available at publishamerica.com. So let's give a warm welcome to our guest this hour. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And tell us a little bit, Karen, about where you call home.
I call Ogden, Utah, home at this point in my life. It's actually a little tiny town outside of Ogden called Marriott Slaterville, and I live on a horse farm with 20 horses, my granddaughter and my children.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Now, you're not a Utah native. You came from the state of Vermont.
That's right.
And the novel that you've written, Show and Tell, is about your life experience.
That's right.
Now, Karen, the novel itself, would you consider it to be mostly fact with fiction, or mostly
it's fact?
It is fact.
Yes.
And did you have to go through a laborious task of contacting people and getting permission to write this story?
At the beginning, I didn't use any real names, so I did not do that. But it became increasingly uncomfortable, and it didn't flow very well with always using my little sister and this kind of thing. So I got permission from almost all of the people in the book to use their real names.
You grew up in a small community in Vermont, and at what age did you move to Utah?
12. I moved away from Vermont at 12, lived in various other places, and came to Utah, I believe I was 18 or 19.
Karen, you've lived then the majority of your adult life, obviously, there in Utah, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
You pursued a degree?
Yes.
And you are presently a teacher?
Yes, I teach children with emotional and behavior disorders, and I have a master's in counseling, school counseling as well.
So at some point in your adult life, upon reflection, you decided it was time to write this story.
Yes, about 3 years ago.
I
decided to do that.
Did it take 3 years to finally complete the book?
About 2.5 years.
2.5 years. And, so this is something you've had to think about, relive, reinvestigate, all of these emotions and feelings that you experienced in your youth.
Right.
That's a painful and difficult experience for most people. Did you find it to be rewarding?
You know, it was painful and difficult to remember and to visualize, because, you know, you have to put details to make it well written. But I think I had worked through a lot of the painfulness of it for my own self. I cried because of remembering, but I didn't feel like I was reliving it.
Yes, I know that from the many authors we've had at Authors First, the hundreds, it's a frequent theme to write about something that you have a passion, something that you feel needs to come out in a strong way. I've spoken to authors recently. We had Paul Murphy on the air, and he said, 26 years ago, I had this experience, and it took that long before he finally had the willingness, the desire, that it just was overwhelming. He had to write, and he wrote his book.
Yeah.
I was curious, did you come to some kind of crossroads like that, Karen?
You know, I've probably come to a lot of them in my life, but I've been a single parent here in Utah and worked a couple of jobs most of the time and just been incredibly busy. I've kept journals, which have helped me through my life to remember some of the details. But I I have to say, probably with me, it was a desire, maybe teaching the students I teach and seeing their lives, a desire to put something out there that would help, that I hope would help or touch someone else.
And during, of course, the one love that you learned early in your life, since you were able to walk, I guess, so the love of horses.
Absolutely.
And that remained.
Yes, and to this day.
Now, when you were traveling before you settled in Utah, were you also close to horses in these other situations and locations, or did you have a period of time where, you know, you weren't really involved with horses?
Most of the moves I made, I either made with horses or I found a way to get with horses. There's one that I talk about this shaggy, poor old horse that some kids at the school I was at brought because they heard me say I could ride and they didn't believe me. And to me, I thought she was the most beautiful thing in the world because I hadn't been on my horses for a while. But I've always found a way to be with horses or to have them with me, which has been a very fortunate thing. It hasn't always been my horses, but the people I lived with in California had horses, and they've been a huge part of my life and getting through the stuff that I've gotten through.
You know, it seems to me that horses and those who love them and board them and train them and breed them and so forth, it really is a sort of a click, a tight. I mean, once you get into horses, you're with everyone else who love them.
Right. They call it a genetic disease.
Okay, a genetic disease.
In the girl and horses world.
Oh, Karen. So,
and my granddaughter has it too.
Well, that is wonderful. And
yeah.
And through the years, you've probably had many horses that were close to you.
Yes.
And you build a relationship, as most owners of pets do. The cats, dogs,
right.
Birds, fish, but the connection that you have with a horse is something special, isn't it?
It is very special. They've been my best friends.
Karen, tell our audience about that. What has the relationship been like with horses?
I may get a little mushy or over the top here, but it's the smell of them, the feel of them. The look of their muscles rippling under the skin, the way they look at you because they know you take care of them, or the way they come to you when you're upset, but when you're happy, you can't catch them. The way they respond and understand, and if you're fair with them, they respond in a very giving and benevolent way.
And so when you were, you know, training your horses, you have 25 on your farm.
Well, there are 20 here.
Or 20.
Mm-hmm. I live on a horse farm. 5 of them are mine.
Oh, my. And you have to care for each one in a very personal way. They can't be neglected.
Oh, I know them all.
Every square inch.
Yep.
So, you know, in writing your book, do you think the horses and your love for horses had an influence?
Absolutely. I believe that, and there are so many of us, I mean, we talk about dysfunctional families and we talk about things that happen to people, and everybody has a story. And I think that those who get through it the best, through the hard times the best, are those that have something, whether it's music or horses or cats or dogs or baseball or something, some kind of a love that we can hide away and lose ourselves in.
Karen, on the cover of your book, is that you on
that
on
is
the
me.
Horse? And that's your horse?
That is actually a horse I was training for someone at the time.
Ah.
Probably 15 years ago.
Oh, that's an old photograph.
Then. Yeah.
And I'd like for you to open the show this evening, Karen, by telling our audience in an overview fashion, what is your book all about, Show and Tell?
My book is about my life, but there were so many things that happened. I was born in an early childhood was in like what I consider a paradise on a wonderful farm in New England, and I mean 400 acres to run wild and free and all of that. Milky Way Farm, yes. And at 12 on my birthday, my mother left my father and took all of us children and the horses to the south. And just to do an overview, at that point my life forever changed, because there then became physical, verbal, religious abuse poured on us as children. There were four of us, by the singing partner that my mother hooked up with. So, but what I want people to know my book is about is it is about surviving it, which I'm not sure I love that word, because we all survive, but it's becoming the very best we can be and making a difference and making every day count. And I tell my students, make it worth it that you're here. In all of the 6 billion people in the world, do something to make it worth it to take up space here. And I think that's what I want my book to be about more than anything else.
You begin the book as painting the picture of the paradise.
Yes.
How did your parents come to have that 400-acre property in Vermont?
You know, I am not sure how they came to have it. I believe my father went up there and in driving saw it, and the price was right.
I'll bet you wish you had that property today.
Yes, I do.
It'd be worth a fortune if you could pay the property taxes.
Oh, yeah.
How many acres are you presently living on?
5.
5 acres.
Yeah.
And so the horses that are there, they have owners that come and take them for rides and so forth. And is it a horse boarding ranch?
It's not really a boarding ranch. There's an individual family who owns it.
They have
a couple of boarders here, but the family members come and ride and do all that. There's a big indoor and an outdoor arena. We do jumping horses.
But this wasn't the environment in Vermont.
No. No, it was just a farm. We jumped on bareback with halters and galloped around till we fell off, and then we chased the pony down and got on again.
Was it a large community?
Tiny. I went to a one-room schoolhouse.
No kidding.
There were 4 kids in my grade, 30 in the whole schoolhouse, grades 1 through 6.
No wonder you received such a wonderful education.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, to have that kind of tutoring.
Yeah, it was super.
Really laid the foundation for you. Were there siblings attending the same school with you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My brother's older sister and I all attended at the same time, and when my little sister attended, my older sister had gone to the next bigger school.
You have a sister and a brother. And
two sisters and a brother.
Oh, 2 sisters and a brother.
Yep.
And all 4 of you were impacted by the ultimate divorce and losing the farm and then moving and having this individual in your life that really was a negative influence.
Yes.
And her name is Bunny.
Yep.
And Bunny becomes a central character, of course, in your book, Show and Tell.
Yes, she does. And she is the only one that I didn't ask permission to use her real name.
Do you think she cares?
No. Mm-hmm. Nope, I don't. I mean, if she does, it doesn't matter.
Well, tell us about Bunny.
Bunny was, for a bunch of kids living on a small farm going to a one-room schoolhouse, she was like something that roared out of a children's book, but not necessarily a good one, because she drove up in a, you know, all-leather Harley-Davidson motorcycle, and just ultimately we were in love with her. She had hair down to her waist, beautiful blue eyes. People used to say she looked like Ally McGraw from Love Story. And she could play any musical instrument she touched, played games with us. she was, we couldn't believe it. We just, she was, we looked up to her eyes, especially. I was enamored by her. And she stayed in a trailer on the farm that was off to the side
and
for
she,
a while because she and
in,
my mother
yes.
were singing partners. They became singing partners. They met at a political rally, and they became singing partners. Because music was another part of my life. It wasn't so much in Vermont for me, but my mother was very into music. And Bunny was quite the musician, so.
So they were intending on playing together and performing in
yes.
different functions.
Right, and they did perform together on a patriotic album that they made, as well as some live performances at some political conventions and things.
Growing up then, music played an important role in you and your siblings' lives.
Yes, it did. And still does. I love music. I don't play much anymore, but because the practices became tough. But music has certainly gotten me through a lot of tough times as well. So anyway, when she took over our lives, so to speak, my father seemed to just acquiesce to her, at least enough to let us go. And then my mom and Bunny went to Nashville to become country music stars. That was the idea, and that's why we went to the South. And after that, you know, the true colors of Bunny started. You know, even on the trip, she beat my little sister, and you know, did the typical, oh, "Don't tell, I'll give you this and this and this if you just don't tell." So that's when the abusive behavior. In as well as far as physical and verbal started.
For what length of time did that occur? How many years was Bunny in your life?
I believe 3 or 4 years.
And yet that period of time was traumatic.
Yeah, because our mother was not really terribly stable. So Bunny more or less took over. And you know, anything she said or did, that's how it was. So it was tough. It was tough to lose everything we had in Vermont, all the freedom and all the, you know, we were just a bunch of wild little kids climbing in the hayloft, riding our ponies, playing in the mud, whatever, to all of a sudden, and we were in trouble if we forgot to flush the toilet or flushed it at the wrong time. It was, and we didn't have our dad there. He was the nurturing force, and we didn't have him there to kind of help balance that out.
Well, at some point in time, enough was enough. And
right.
You were out on your own.
Yeah, it took a long time for me. A little longer, because I was very, very enamored by any of the music. It took a long time, longer time for me than my siblings.
And whatever happened of Bunny?
I believe she's living in Florida now. I don't really know. I don't know much about what she's done or is doing. Probably something to do with religion, because she got saved at some point in Tennessee, and then some of the abuse turned to kind of
religious discipline.
Yeah, religious discipline and staying up all night. Brainwashing, that's the word I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think she's in Florida. I'm pretty sure she is, but that's all I know.
Karen Vanderland is our guest this hour on the Artist First World Radio Network. Tony Kay, of course, in the studio. If you have a question or comment, you can send them to dj@artistfirst.com. Her novel, Show and Tell, is her personal experience, and it's extremely well written. There are poems, inserted photographs, black and white pictures, and Publish America has done a fine job at putting this material together. 267 pages in length, available at Amazon.com and PublishAmerica.com. And we've placed the web link at ArtistFirst.com's homepage for your benefit if you'd like to scroll over and learn more. Karen, we were discussing your experience. At some point in time, you finally got away from Bunny and began a life of your own. Can you share with us how that happened?
You know, it happened around religion, because there was still continued. I was not in Tennessee anymore when I finally left Bunny's clutches or whatever. I was then in Georgia singing in a gospel group with Bunny and three other girls. And there was a group fast that was supposed to be taking place. And I walked into the kitchen, and there was Bunny, who was supposed to be part of the group fast, eating pie, apple pie. And it just hit me that there was something wrong here. And at that point, I started making arrangements to be able to be on my own, and left very shortly, within days.
And traveled to Utah?
I stayed in Georgia for a while, kicking around, trying to figure out how to grow up, because I had no skills. I had no real skills about how to be with people, how to date, how to take care of the things that normal people would know how to take care of. So I stayed there, excuse me, just a minute, and kind of kicked around, did a lot of stupid things that, you know, School of Hard Knocks kinds of things, and then left and came to Utah, where I stayed with some old friends of the family for a little while.
And the rest is history. You went off to college?
Yeah, I went to college here in Utah.
And decided to focus on special needs.
Right.
That is a calling in and of itself, isn't it?
If they are special people.
How many students do you presently have, Karen?
This year I have 9. I can legally have up to 12 in my room, because they are children with emotional and behavior outbursts.
But this year, 9.
9 so far.
9 special people.
Yep.
And it isn't it funny how your life early made a full circle?
Yes.
For you and your children.
That's true.
And then you decided, well, it was time to write a book.
Right.
I mean, in the midst of everything else you've got going on, caring for your children, working, yeah, 9 special needs, your 5 horses, you're a busy gal.
And within 2 months after the book was finished, I began a fight for custody of my granddaughter. So, yeah, I have a lot on my plate. But
it sounds like you're working on novel number 2.
Yeah, it could be.
And so what was the thing that, you know, really said, hey, I'm going to write my book? What happened?
You know, I don't get a lot of time away from the farm or my kids or to do anything. And here's what happened. I had time at a convention for some of the horse stuff that I do with nothing going on, and I was all alone in a hotel room, absolutely nothing, and I just started writing. And I just wrote and wrote. I had 3 days like that, that I didn't have to come home, I didn't have to do anything, and I wrote off and on for those 3 days. And that was, it was like I got time, I felt a need to put it out there. I've had some of my students tell me that my sharing some of my life has touched them and made a difference. And I suppose at 48, I feel like I want to do something to back up what I say to my students and not have wasted my life. So I want to do something to put it out there and do something good with it.
Karen, I would love it if you would read from your book, Show and Tell, available at publishamerica.com. And while Karen is locating a page, there was a lot of work once you started. You went on for 2.5 years after that initial 3 days. And then you began to really pound at your work over a 2.5-year period before it was finished. you have poems, photographs. Your writing is so clear and emotionally powerful. Would you please set up a little bit of the background before you read your selected passage?
Well, I've vacillated a little bit because I was going to read a little bit about Paradise and then Paradise Lost, but I've decided to read about, I'm going to read from the prologue about a little girl in my class and the experience that was, for me, very profound with one of my students. You want me to go ahead now?
Yes, go ahead, Karen.
Okay. A 12-year-old girl in my middle school class for children with emotional problems wanted to spend her lunch hour in the classroom. I had just been selected as one of two teacher heroes by our local school foundation for my work rescuing horses. Embarrassed by accolade, I immediately stored the poster-sized photo essay used to publicize the honor. My young student had seen the poster in my classroom closet and asked to read it. After lunch, this child became increasingly unruly. Her belligerence escalated as the afternoon wore on, almost to the point that I might be forced to suspend her from school. We survived the afternoon. After the dismissal bell rang, I straightened the room and picked up the poster to put it away. A mark caught my eye. Someone had smeared a word on the perimeter off the poster and then had attempted to repair the damage. Making things worse, it dawned on me that my little student, in holding up the poster, had smudged one word with her thumb. The reason for her misbehavior became clear. When she arrived the next morning, I asked my staff assistant to teach the class while I escorted the little girl into the hall. I said to her with a smile, "I think I know why you were having such a hard time yesterday." Her little body became rigid and her eyes dropped to her shoes. Then she tossed her head and with characteristic defiance demanded, "Why?" "When you were reading my poster yesterday, you accidentally..." "Suspend me if you want to. I don't care." Her words were betrayed by the tears running down her cheeks. My eyes welled up as I put my hands on her small shoulders. "It was an accident, sweetie," I whispered. "Don't you know you are worth more to me than that poster?" She raised her head and stared at me, her mouth opened. I hugged her tightly. She laid her head on my shoulder, and I felt her body relax. Here was a child whose alcoholic father demanded that she remove her clothes and grant him sexual favors. Here was a physically beautiful child whose mother took her to the area of town where prostitutes gather and used her to attract men. Here was a child surrounded by adults who exploited her at every turn and, worse, made her feel responsible for their exploitation. Only her feisty spirit protected her from further sexual abuse. Each time she felt backed against the wall, her claws came out. She fought everything. She had spent time in a lockup facility for drug use. Her only protection from her family came from the supervision provided by the state because she never earned her way off probation. I hated to think that anything connected with me might add to her misery or to the weight of the responsibility she already carried for the unconscious adult in her life. She gave me one last embrace, and we returned together to our classroom. And then I wrote a poem. Isabel, Big Brother said, "Just wait till you meet her. She's a good kid. She's perfect." Isabel, whose non-father touched her, whose mother took his side, no one believed her pain. Isabel, who is betrayed, angry and so afraid, fights back. Hate-filled words are quickly spewed. Fierce defiance, her protection of choice. Isabel, still perfect inside, but the world did not know.
Show and Tell, a reading from our author this hour, Karen Vanderland. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm at a loss at words myself because there's so much we don't know as a teacher about the very people that are in our presence.
That's very true.
And I know in working with the public most of my natural life that there are circumstances behind each individual that we're just not there. And behavioral problems, learning problems, emotional situations are, there's something behind.
Absolutely right.
What has occurred. And you have found a very articulate and moving way to bring that to our attention. And your novel, Show and Tell, is really gripping. You could just read it and read it and read it.
Thank you.
You don't want to put it down. 267 pages long, but it's a powerful read. 2.5 years in the making?
Yep.
With everything else you're doing, Karen.
Or a lifetime in the making.
A lifetime. A lifetime, and so much more yet to give and do. It is a joy to talk to someone like you, Karen, because you're reflecting on your entire life of 48 years and saying, hey, you know, what do I have to offer for the future?
Yeah.
This book is for today, but it is a gift to the future. And anyone who has had similar experiences personally with a bad parent, step-parent, religious leader, if you have been abused sexually, this is a book that would give comfort and direction to that person. And that is a true gift.
And that's what I want to do.
And I thank you for sharing, opening up your life, your experience, your reflection, and giving us this gift, this beautiful novel.
Thank you. That's what I want it to be. I want it to do good.
When you had the manuscript finished, Karen, it was time to find a publisher. Would you tell our audience about that experience?
I had the very wonderful good fortune to, and here the horses come into play again. I had also written years before, when my daughter was very young, I wrote a book about her and her relationship with one of my old horses that I had had as a teenager. They spent a lot of time together. And the book was picked up by Publish America because when I wrote the query letter, it happened to fall into the hands of an editor who was a horse person. So she was interested in it, and they published the book. And the name of that book is Anna and Shen. When I got this book done, I immediately said, I had actually sent them the idea before I had the manuscript completed. I sent them what I was doing, and they accepted it at that point, waiting until I had it done. And it was because of the horses and the editor who was a horse person herself that they accepted it.
It's a beautiful book.
I think they've done a super job.
And you are an incredible writer.
Thank you.
Do you see a future in writing for yourself? Are you working on any new novels?
I am working on another children's book right now about my granddaughter and her pony, a picture book. And there's some ideas and journals to do with the fight for my granddaughter and what that has been like to keep her safe, and interesting, because it's interesting to be on the other side. I deal with my students who are in state's custody often or in foster care, but I've not been on that side when it's been so close personally. So I don't know what I will do with all of this, but I will write something, even if it's just something to change some of the legislation that has not made it easy to protect her.
Karen, if someone listening would like to get in touch with you directly, do you have an email address?
I do. It's EQUESTRIK at AOL.com.
And there must be a story behind your last name, VANDERLAAN.
Yes.
What is the heritage?
It is Dutch. And my great-great-grandfather came over from Holland to Connecticut, New York, that area.
In the 1700s?
Probably later than that. probably 1800s. They came over. They were well-to-do. I don't know what happened to all the money, but they came over on a boat. They were naval people, and they set up a tile company, as the Dutch are very famous for their tile work and that, in New York, called the Vanderlaan Tile Company, and it's still in existence there. I don't know much about it. Unfortunately, my father's father, my grandfather, had a falling out with the family over before I was ever born, so there was not a lot of contact or a lot of information given.
That is a story.
Yeah.
Sounds like another novel.
Yeah.
Karen, what a pleasure to have you with us on ArtistFirst.com. Tony Kaye in the studio. Please send your questions, comments to dj@artistfirst.com. And of course, I want to thank PublishAmerica.com for their fine work. We have interviewed hundreds of authors from PublishAmerica.com, and every single one are great reads. Not a bad book in the bunch. And they do fine, fine work, and their editorial staff is excellent, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
They assign you a particular editor?
They did, but I can't remember who it was. I've worked with some, because the children's book was different people than the novel. I could go down on my computer and find out, but I don't, right off the top of my head, know who it was.
But you have a one-on-one. You have a professional that can review your material and put it in its proper context for you. Was it necessary to make very many changes? Of course, you had already written a book before, so you knew about the process.
Yes, but a huge difference between a children's book and a novel. But they want it to come to them fairly finished. They'll do a couple of fixes and make suggestions. But they want it to come to them pretty finished. I bet I rewrote it 20 times and edited it and had people look at it before I sent it to them. And then rewrote it two or three times after that. Not the whole book, of course, but, you know, just cleaning it up.
And to give it that final polish.
Exactly.
And that all, now it's your baby.
Right.
Where do you think you'll be taking it? Do you have any book signings planned or other internet promotions?
I've done local book signings here at home with three of the bookstores. They've read it in some book clubs, and the Barnes & Noble locally now have it. I've done a lot of promoting on the internet because that's easy for me to do from home where I'm working and doing the farm and have the granddaughter. I would like to certainly do book signings anywhere who would have me. I would also like to explore the idea of doing some public speaking seminars or things like that.
It's an ongoing process.
Absolutely.
Now there's a whole new business development that needs to occur in your life and the direction that you would like your novels to take. There are over 1 million novels published a year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's staggering when you think about it, and yours is just one of those.
So you can't just leave it at a publisher, and here it is. It's a book.
That's exactly right.
You've got to get out and let people know that it's available and that it's worth reading and to have that contact with you.
Yep.
And it begins on the local level.
Absolutely. And then word of mouth is wonderful. The one bookstore that did the book signing here right in town has now done, I think I've done two signings and two book clubs with them because the word of mouth has gotten out. And I think it'll just keep going from there. Of course, not, you know, I have to do the effort. But my goal is, of course, to have it much more widely known and read.
Well, it requires an investment of time. And I know coming up at the top of the hour, we have another show, Annie Jennings PR.
And I intend to listen to that one.
And she has a wonderful organization, and I'm sure there are others in your local area, depending on your budget. But I know that she has a cassette series for sale. I believe it's $579 or something that you can buy from Annie Jennings PR. And there are resources out there for authors.
Right.
To get in touch, to have radio interviews, AM and FM, TV, talk shows, to get your message out in a big way to a lot of people.
Right. It's just educating myself to know who to contact, how to contact, so they pay attention. Because if you're contacting them, you know other people are too.
You need partners that that share your vision and believe in your material. And then it requires an investment of money and time in your project.
Yep, absolutely.
You spent 2.5 years. How much money did you lose not doing other things while you wrote your book? Well, you didn't think of it in that way, or the novel would have never materialized
exactly
at all.
Right.
You would have gotten that second job. You would have done something else.
Right, yep.
So you've already invested whatever salary you choose to give yourself for that time, right?
Yep. That's right.
It could be $100,000, it could be $200,000, it could be $1 million, whatever amount of dollar you wish to attribute to the time invested. Now you're just going to leave that investment sit there and do nothing?
Not me.
You have to invest in the marketing and advertising and promoting.
Absolutely.
And no one, no one can promote your book better than you.
That's right. You know, it's another educational process, educating yourself on how to do it, who to send the copies to, and you have to invest in your book. Absolutely. Many copies have been sent out for PR free, and that's what you have to do.
And it will never end. Now, you may end up with 5, 10, 15, 20 novels.
Yep.
And the audience will change, and your popularity will grow. At some point, you'll have to come back and talk about the children's book you wrote first.
Uh-huh.
You don't know. That could be the biggest seller.
It could be. It's a beautiful little book.
The notoriety, the publicity that you gain as an author by getting out there on the internet, doing talk shows like this, that gains exposure, but the audience itself may be attracted to something you've written years ago.
Right.
But the publicity may be coming from a recent release.
Yep, that's true.
So, you know, it's yours forever. It's one of your children. You can't escape it. It's always going
right.
to be your child, that book. And you did invest the time, and you have opened up in a very personal way to share your life, your story, your experiences, and it's an articulating read, and I'm very happy for you, Karen.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
We look forward to more books.
Okay.
When is, do you have a timeline scheduled for your next novel?
I don't.
So it could be 2006.
Ideas and poetry, that's right, it could be.
Or it could be 2007.
Right.
But Karen, you're going to be out there in a big way promoting your material.
Yes, I will.
Yeah. Is there anyone on planet Earth you'd like to say a special hello to before we conclude your show this hour?
You know, there are myriads of people in a venture like this. I would like to say a very special thanks to Sandra Crosland, who was my friend and very dedicated editor in all the rewrites before it got to the publisher. And as well as
it's nice to have a friend that can look at your material critically and give you that feedback as an author.
Yeah,
in that process.
Yeah.
You write in isolation, but you really do need a team of others around you that can reflect on your material as you put it together.
Exactly. And to my sisters and brother, who without their support, the book wouldn't be where it is. I mean, the book never
would
have come.
Well, it's theirs too, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
You know, they've invested and now Show and Tell has opened up to the world an occurrence in your family that shaped each one of you.
Exactly.
in a personal, intimate way. And I'm just, I hope that their lives are as successful as yours has turned
out.
They
are awesome people.
And
they're very successful and wonderful, wonderful people.
So, you know, adversity is there, and it is in the human nature to overcome it.
Yes.
And we can achieve whatever we set our mind and our heart out to achieve.
Absolutely.
And be dedicated to that cause and achieve the objective and be fulfilled.
And be positive influence in the world, one way or another.
And every year you have that privilege with the children you teach who have special needs, and now with your novel, Show and Tell. It's wonderful, Karen. I'm proud of you, and we wish you all of the best, all of the success in promoting your book.
Thank you so very much.
Yes. And do you have a website that we could go to?
The website is just beginning. It's KarenVanderlaan.com. There's a picture of the cover of the book and then a link to Amazon.com as well as Publish America.
Well, we'll just have to remember to search your name on the Google search engine. And
yep.
That's Karen. And we'll spell the name one more time. VanderlaaN. And her novel is Show and Tell. Thanks for being our guest this hour, Karen, on the Artists First World Radio Network. Tony Kay in the studio, and it's been our privilege to have you, our loyal listener, with us. Stay tuned for more great programming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen.